In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
How did we get here, where there has been a Gestapo-like response to masks? You get yelled at by complete strangers who think it's their civic duty to reprimand you and embarrass you into compliance. We got here, we are here, because of panic mongers. In India, it's being said 4,000 people a day are dying from COVID. Now, where have we seen that kind of scaremongering before? Oh, that's right. At the very start of this pandemic, when wild predictions told us tens and tens of millions would die from COVID, it didn't happen. This entire pandemic has been driven by bad models, bad data, bad predictions. Face it, we were lied to. About those 4,000 people a day, people actually in India are saying it's a lie. And there have been videos leaked of people in body bags suddenly opening their eyes until they realize they're being filmed and they go back to being dead again. Now, where have we seen that before? Why, it's just like the CIA-funded white helmets in Syria, staging die-ins from Assad's attacks. Except they kept using the same child actors and filming in different locations because they think people are stupid and wouldn't catch on to them. You trust people and governments by their actions. Words are not the same as actions. Intentions are not the same as actions. I think if there was ever a situation where an unknown virus truly had a devastating 99.8% kill rate, and if our government was trustworthy, we'd want the government to have the power to contain things, quarantine people in areas, and so on. The thing is, this virus is not that situation. Instead, it has a 99.8% recovery rate, even higher if you're in good health or catch it early. Because those who lust for power lied and manipulated right from the beginning, that in itself makes the government not trustworthy. They need to re-earn our trust before we can give it again. And perhaps going forward, if that kind of truly devastating situation ever arose with massive deaths, maybe that power should be vested in local governments, who only have power over those localities and are most directly accountable to the people of those localities because they're your friends and neighbors, rather than the federal or state government that has sweeping control over everything and you have no say about it. Other local authorities could then join in as they see fit based on the situations in their own local areas. That way, the deadly disease would be as contained as the true plague, the lust for power. I'd like to welcome Leah Wilson. She is an attorney with a background in complex litigation and advocacy, and her work as an advocate for children witnessing the rampant use of psychiatric drugs among foster kids led her to help found the nonprofit Stand for Health Freedom in 2019, and she now serves as their executive director. Leah, it's great to talk to you.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us what we need to know about Leah Wilson, and especially what brought you to the Freedom Movement.
Yes, of course. Well, the same thing that got me to law school got me out of law, and that is the foster care, my passion for foster care and those kiddos and seeing them thrive and seeing them get the chance that they deserve despite all of the trauma that they've endured. So I went to law school originally to help pursue reform for the kids that were aging out without a home. You know, we know that Maslow's hierarchy of needs tells us that the foundational sense of belonging has to come first. Right. And so if we have kids aging out of care, we're doing them a great injustice. And the second thing of the over-medication and seeing that the, you know, the some odd 230,000 kiddos age two and under in the U.S. that are on psychotropic drugs in large part are in the foster care system. Those are the kids we're charged with the care of. Through all of that, became foster parents until our foster license was stripped for not fully vaccinating our biological sons. And at that point, I said, all right, God, it's too big of a battle to fight and too important of a battle to walk away from. So where do we go from here? And that's how Stand for Health Freedom was birthed, because we knew that if we help educate the public in a manner where they can take a stand and they can share with others, that the deception won't fly in the halls of government anymore. And the deception won't win the day when it's our kids that are at risk. When kids are sleeping on DCS's floor instead of finding refuge in a law-abiding, loving home like ours. So that's how Stand for Health Freedom started. And we're here to help people take a stand in an organized way that allows the lawmakers and the leaders to see that there are a whole lot of us who have a different opinion than the industry has, and that we're not going away, and we're building this voting block to the 3.5% that it will take for the people's voice to be heard effectively.
So talk to our audience about some of your successes, and then later on we'll talk about what people can actually do in our last segment, because I think after people hear the show, they're really going to want to take some actions. But do talk to us a little bit about some of the real successes you guys have had.
Great. One of our first foundational successes was at the beginning of 2020, before COVID hit. We were helping New Jersey citizens take a stand to protect their religious freedom for their kiddos to continue to go to school, even if they had a religious exemption to one or some or all of the 69 required vaccinations. At that point in time, believe it or not, what we were dealing with was a measles outbreak in a state of some odd, I think it's like 8.9 million people in New Jersey. There were 17 cases of measles, zero deaths. And they used those numbers to strip the religious freedom, to attempt to strip it. And the odds were against the people, because there are 14 major pharmaceutical companies in New Jersey. So the lobby is amazingly strong in that state. So we had over 80,000 emails sent in a week's time to say, we don't want this. We're here. We're not going away. And we were able to pivot when amendments were introduced to say this only makes the law worse, and then Click to Act, another 30,000 emails sent, and the bill came to the floor two times, which when a bill comes to the floor, for those of you who don't know, it means that the sponsor has the votes to get it through in large part. And twice we were able to help stop that bill and send home the pharmaceutical industry empty-handed in New Jersey.
That is really awesome. So a lot of your work, certainly to get going, has been to stand up against vaccines. So here's something that I often try to run by people that are really pro-vaccine. And I say, if you're vaccinated, why do you care if others aren't? Because if you're vaccinated, then you're protected. And if you're not protected, then your vaccine isn't effective. So how do pro-vaccine people respond to that?
It's a great question. I think, you know, they see as any hole in artificial herd immunity as detrimental to the whole. So with natural herd immunity, believe it or not, doctors say that you can have as low as 10% of a population have acquired immunity. When you get into the pharmaceutical world where it's artificial herd immunity, we're seeing that people want the vaccination rates at 95% or above.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So once you fall below that 95%, it's creating gaps. It's creating opportunity for outbreak. But what we know is we have seen outbreaks in fully vaccinated populations,
yes,
like Navy ships, you know? And so this isn't about, this is not about, we have families in New Jersey who took a stand during that season and still take a stand on our campaigns in that state that vaccinate their children. And it's because they don't want to be told at any given juncture what to do with their child.
That's right.
So it has nothing to do with saying, I want all the vaccines, I want none of the vaccines or some of the vaccines. All it is saying, I get to choose what goes in my body. And that is one thing where I'm going to draw a boundary line between me and the government. And the same thing for me and my children, that nothing should come between the parent-child relationship. It's a very sacred relationship, and we are best suited to look out for those children and do what's best for them and not have the notion that we can sacrifice them for the greater good, because the whole is made up of a bunch of individuals.
So, and the parents should always have the ultimate responsibility for that. Supreme Court has said so. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming up, we'll be digging into protecting your health freedom, including what's happening here in Oregon and how they are once again using us as the policy petri dish. Stick around for that. But up next, we'll get a little clarity on some of these issues. After all, if you're going to engage on the battlefield, you need to know the rules of the battlefield. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the Ice Fight Radio Show. We're talking today to Leah Wilson. She's an attorney and the co-founder and executive director of the nonprofit Stand for Health Freedom. Leah, in this segment, I want to get some clarity and maybe correct some misconceptions or misinformation that's out there. And that way, our audience is more prepared and informed to push back where they can. We want people to push back in an informed way. So let's start with one thing I often hear, both from those on the sidelines who aren't willing to engage and which gets thrown in people's face from the pro-COVID mandate side, the notion that, quote, it's the law, and that laws aren't optional. You have to do what they tell you. What would you say to people who are hearing that?
I assume you're talking about health orders, right?
Right, but, right.
That's
what's
coming out of the health department this day and age, because they've been given the royal crowns over our children, over us, our businesses. And the thing is that the health department does not have any jurisdictional, that's a big word to say, that really there's nothing that says they can tell us what to do, a jurisdictional authority. They put out guidance, and if that guidance is to become law, it has to go through a legislative deliberative body, which means at the local level, it was either your city council or your county commissioners. At the state level, it would be your general assembly, or at the federal level, it would be Congress. And if it hasn't been put into law by one of those bodies, then it's not enforceable under the force of law. And people haven't really pushed back against it, you know, to test that. And in some areas they have, and it's gone to court, and we haven't seen many losses. I've seen a few wins here in Indiana where they have admitted that they overreached on their authority, which then begs the question of what's the ramification for them for falsely representing their authority to the public, right? So it's how can executive orders actually be used in the public arena? And they really have a limited effect. Of executive orders are meant to be used to say how we run the administrations that are under the governor. So the governor or the executive official in a county, the mayor, those are the people who get to say how their administrative agencies are ran using executive orders. So it's time for us to challenge things, to push back, to test the boundaries, and to say, okay, if you're going to say this does have the force of law, Let's prove that up in court. Let's challenge that. And a lot of people don't have the grit to do that, but we have seen some amazingly bold leaders, even there in the Pacific Northwest, come out and say that we are going to challenge this. And if we get negative rulings, that we'll just change the county ordinances so that we can find solutions and ways around the things that are harming our families and businesses.
Yeah, I know Yamhill County here in Oregon is looking at making itself a COVID sanctuary county in the sense that all of these COVID mandates wouldn't apply, and especially the COVID vaccines and the passports and whatnot. Early on in the mask mandates, it was said that ADA rules said that stores had to accommodate people if they didn't want to wear a mask for their own health reasons. And there are plenty of health reasons why you shouldn't want to wear a mask, and that under ADA, stores could be actually fined if they didn't accommodate. What can you tell us about the ADA rules and how they interact with all of this?
Well, if we're expecting any federal laws to work to our benefit, we might have a loss of expectation, because ADA, just like the EEOC laws for employment protections, they allow for reasonable accommodations. How do we interpret reasonable accommodations? How do we interpret undue cost? And what we're hearing and seeing is a reasonable accommodation is that you shop online, that you get the curbside delivery, that you no longer have the privilege of shopping in the store, of seeing the things that you're picking out, of picking your own produce. And that can seem trivial and silly until you recognize that like 30% of the senior population doesn't have a smartphone, and more than 30% of the population at poverty line doesn't have a smartphone. So then you're disenfranchising parts of the population just by using those reasonable accommodations. So it's tricky and it's sad. And it's another thing that has to be challenged. We hear people asking us all the time, can my employer force me to get the vaccine or tell me to leave? And without explicit protections at the state level, these federal laws leave such a huge gap for the employers to say, there's no reasonable accommodation.
Yeah. And I know that, and I want to talk to you some more about that too, in terms of what the employers can and can't do. I'll do that in a little bit later here. But another thing that we hear is whether or not this is governed under HIPAA. The discussion is that vaccine passports and stores asking to see proof of vaccination, either for entry or to go maskless while there, isn't allowed under HIPAA. I mean, the notion that people can ask this or demand proof of this. Others are saying that HIPAA is merely governing between the rule itself. I mean, HIPAA is merely governing between health industry professionals and has nothing to do with businesses demanding to see your health records. So can you give us some clarity on that end of things?
Yes, of course. One thing that I do love that OSHA has said recently is that if you require the vaccine as a term of employment, then all of the vaccine reactions are also yes. work related. So yep. that made me, I thought, wow, there's some common sense in that. There's some fairness for the people in that statement. Little beacon of hope right there for the people. You know, like I said, I don't care what decision people make, but I do think that there should be transparency and there should be ethics involved in anything that has to do with the care and concern of our bodies. In terms of asking about HIPAA, HIPAA only, you're right, when you in the latter part of your statement covers specific covered entities or individuals such as a doctor, an insurance company, et cetera, those that are trusted with the use of health information. So that is who is has to answer to the HIPAA laws are those that are entrusted with health information for the purpose of health. However, giving your health information voluntarily to someone such as a store clerk or a vet tech or, you know, anyone under the sun right now who's asking you to disclose your vaccine status or ask you why you don't have a mask on, those are matters of privacy. And there's a lot of privacy laws that are state specific. And we all know that our constitution guarantees us a level of privacy, but it requires the people exercising that freedom. You know, a piece of paper does not do us any good if we don't stand
That's right.
in what it provides us. So That's your right. freedom requires your participation. So we have to be aware enough to participate in our freedom. One of my friends, I was cracking up because she said her and her husband were in the parking lot at the vet's office. Vet doesn't let you come in. They come out to the car to retrieve your pet. And they said, can you please put a mask on? And her husband did. And she said, why did you just let a vet tech tell you what health decision to make?
That's right.
So we're just That's in right. this state of frenzy where we think that anyone and everyone can tell us how to care for our bodies.
Yeah,
which
it's
I guess
pretty...
if you want to play on their turf, they can, right?
Yep,
but if you
exactly
don't want
right.
to play on their turf, then say no.
Yep.
Like stand up.
You only have the freedoms that you're willing to stand up and defend. That's for sure. All right, coming up, we'll be talking about more on the mask mandates out here and also the direction where all of this is now heading, including the big one, vaccine passports that Oregon is gearing up for. Remember, they do it here first to work out the kinks before they push it elsewhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Glad you're joining us today here on the Oxford Radio Show. For the last year, we've been pushed around. Now it's time to push back because it won't stop here. It won't stop with this one disease. We're talking today with Leah Wilson. She's an attorney and the co-founder and executive director of the nonprofit Stand for Health Freedom. You can find out more by heading to standforhealthfreedom.com. That's the letter 4, F-O-R, standforhealthfreedom.com. Leah, just to pick up a little bit on that last segment there, in terms of being asked whether or not you've got the vaccine or show proof that you've got it and that sort of stuff, it just really seems like we're entering a real slippery slope at that point. I mean, can you ask to see whether a woman has had an abortion? I mean, you can just see the extreme here. I mean, why would you want a murderer in your store or sit next to them on the plane? It's crazy that we're now essentially turning everybody into the health Gestapo.
That's right. And when I talked to Vera Shirov, a Holocaust survivor, she said, we don't even need the Gestapo anymore because technology does that for us, which is what we're seeing. So one of the big triggers, if you want to know when to put your spidey senses up and when to really pay attention, a trigger is are they basing access on vaccine status or on some health status? So the access is a trigger. That is a vaccine passport type program. Another huge trigger, and the one that we need to be extremely intentional about, is digital identification, because these infrastructures that are being built can be used for so many different reasons. Like you said, they're not, it's not going to stop with one simple vaccine, not even a simple one round of this vaccine, because in Israel, we're seeing that the government ordered from Pfizer four of these doses for every single citizen. And so why the four doses in a single year? Because word has it that it's going to be two shots every 6 months for the COVID-19 vaccine, whereas with the flu shot, it's an annual thing. So recognizing that it's not just, okay, I'm just going to comply so they'll get off my back so that I can go on with my life, because what we're giving up is an open society. If we comply, even if you choose to get the vaccine, great. However, if you comply with a digital passport system, then what you're giving away is open society for our children. That society will look very differently, very quickly, and we'll have to live with the fact that we didn't stand up against this. The good thing is that America does have a shot at holding the line on this issue. We're uniquely situated to push back on this, to say that we're not going to do this, especially because it's contingent. The success of the passport programs are contingent upon the vast majority of the population taking the vaccination. And so if we have people that are getting informed consent and seeing this doesn't make sense for themselves and they're opting out, then their system won't work. So that's why knowledge is power. It's powerful not only for the individual to know exactly what they're stepping into, but it's power for our future generations.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So here in Oregon, stores can be fined thousands of dollars for not complying. You had said that earlier that people and businesses need to fight back and push back on this, and that there has been some legal challenges to this. Have there been any signs of which way courts are ruling on these things? Have cases actually been ruled upon at this point? And if so, how did that go?
It's a really good question. There's a lot of pending cases still. I don't know any with businesses that have come to full resolution personally, but I do know there's been several settlements of saying that there was overreach in terms of executive authority or in terms of the public health department's authority. We also saw in Michigan that the General Assembly and the Supreme Court said that their governor's actions were unconstitutional, that they were null and void, but yet what changed?
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And then it's like, okay, do we get weary and take our ball and go home, or do we persist? Is this a battle that we're showing up for and that we're not going home, that we're going to continue stepping forward in action? It's not about being right. It's just about right action at this point in the game.
Yep. The other side that wants control is not simply going to just stop and give up. Let's shift now a little bit into the vaccines. We know that as condition for developing the vaccines, the drug companies did so under the condition that they had zero liability. It is untested, unproven gene technology, and all three of these companies have a long history of bad vaccines and drugs, but they can't be held liable for this vaccine, no matter how many problems they cause. Not our fault. But here's the thing, though. You can't watch a commercial on TV about an allergy pill that doesn't have a list of side effects and warnings longer than the part of the ad actually promoting the pill. Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and others are now actively promoting the vaccine, even stating that they went through extensive testing, they're safe, nothing to worry about. So if people were convinced by the marketing, can people sue Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc., for their role in persuading people to take a vaccine that has had serious adverse effects, including death?
No. And the PrEP Act is very clear. So we know that childhood vaccinations have carry no liability for those who administer the vaccines or those who manufacture the vaccines under the Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. However, in this current situation, the PrEP Act provides even more insulation for all parties involved, because it says that those who are promoting the product are also immune from liability because we're in a state of emergency. So if those people can get the word out about the product, we're not going to hold them liable for anything that goes wrong. Anyone who promotes it, anyone who requires it, anyone who distributes it, there's no liability. And there's a 1-year limitation on even bringing your claim to the CICP, which is the countermeasures. The name is leaving me right now, but it's the board that you can go to. You can file a claim with that says, hey, I took this vaccination and then this happened. I need compensated. So this compensation program, the countermeasures injury compensation program, they won't even take your filing if it's been more than a year since the shot. And we know that autoimmune issues, these types of things don't always come up immediately, nor do we know what the triggering event was immediately. Sometimes it takes time to come out of a tragic event to reflect and say, oh, that was the catalyst. So people just need to be aware when they are consenting to the use of an experimental product that is for profit. Everyone thinks it's free. They think I'm going to my free appointment for my free vaccination. But guess what? Our tax dollars are paying those for Moderna, the almost $20 billion this year. And for Pfizer, $15 billion this year alone for the product.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Up next, the vaccine passport and what Oregon's up to now. You know, people across the country make the mistake of not paying attention to what happens in Oregon. We are the petri dish for experimental leftist policies. If you want to pull out hydroelectric dams to save fish rather than build a better fish ladder, try it in Oregon. Want to stop logging? Try out your newfangled policies in Oregon. We are ground zero for nuclear leftist bombs launched on the rest of the country. We're talking today to Leah Wilson. She's an attorney and the co-founder and executive director of the nonprofit Stand for Health Freedom. You can find out more by heading to standforhealthfreedom.com. And Leah, you have a text as well that people can get information.
Yes, that's right. Especially when we're talking about vaccine passports, you can text the word STAND, S-T-A-N-D, to the number 313131 and get the link to take action against vaccine passports. So text the word STAND to 313131.
Absolutely. That's great. Love high-tech freedom. That's great. So, getting back into this notion of vaccine passports and whatnot, what I don't get is how people can be legally and socially pressured into getting a vaccine that has no guarantee you won't get the virus after you get the vaccine, and there's no guarantee you won't spread it despite having the vaccine, and yet the vaccine is being promoted and pushed as though it's the savior of mankind, the gateway to get all your freedoms back. So how is it, fundamentally, can a flawed, potentially dangerous vaccine be used as the tool for all of this compliance?
You've got me. The common sense is waning, is it not? I mean, we've had this extended state of emergency that has put us all in a place of submission to say we will do whatever it takes to get back to normal. And we even saw reporters saying, we have to remember this is a carrot approach. Don't give them too much back before we have the answer, before we have people where we want them in terms of vaccination rates. And now people are confused because they're saying, well, the CDC is now saying we don't have to wear the masks, even though 2 weeks ago they said that the vaccinated still needed to wear the masks. And, you know, the forethought is that what's happening today is they're lifting the mask mandates so that they can use it as an excuse of we can no longer distinguish between the unvaccinated and the vaccinated, which means we have to have a vaccine passport program. And I mean, let's get real, folks, that there is a lot of money to be made on for-profit pharmaceutical products to serve the entire globe. So if we have a population of 330 million here in the U.S. alone, and they need 2 to 4 jabs a year, how much money is on the line? And not only that, it's in combination with or holding hands with the government. So you have government and industry walking in lockstep, which is never a great idea because our government has been for sale for way too long, especially at the federal level. And now there are these contracts between the government and the pharmaceutical industry to posit this as the solution before we even know if it is a solution.
So in Oregon, they have passed a bill that's going to start initiating this. It is HB 3057, recently passed in the House. It's now headed to the Senate. The legislative summary says that it authorizes the Oregon Health Authority to disclose individually identifiable information related to COVID-19 to certain persons and under certain circumstances. In effect, the state is tinkering with the idea of a COVID passport. And it just seems like if the Oregon Health Authority, and don't you just love that Nazi-esque name, the Oregon Health Authority is authorized to release identifiable private information. I mean, this is really, you know, you're talking about the corner grocer suddenly having to be the health Gestapo to verify something that's on some vaccination card. And what if these vaccine cards become imprinted with computer chips? I mean, this just really opens such a massive can of worms here.
It really does. It is a structure that is not intended to just be for vaccines. And that's what you hear a lot of the policy experts saying, is even using the word vaccine passport is so limited. It's limited thinking and understanding of what a technology like this could be used to do, especially data mining is the name of the game this day and age. And what are they doing with our kids all being forced into Google classrooms and learning how our kids think and their eating patterns and how they respond to things? And so collecting all this data to predict human behavior and then having the infrastructure to manipulate us in any way that they want. The good news is that in Israel, one of the things that the population was able to stand up against after the Israeli government made a contract with Pfizer to get the population vaccinated, which I laugh out of desperation, not because it's funny at all, but they were able to stand up and push back against this very measure that you're seeing in Oregon. And that is sharing identifying information with entities, with local health departments of those who have not been vaccinated. And this is not something we should take lightly, that we absolutely have to stand up on this issue. If there's any issue to stand up on, it's to maintain our privacy as it relates to our information and how the government can use it.
So one of the things I have heard a few weeks back when this was being floated, not just here in Oregon, but in some other states as well, is that they thought that there was a technicality because it's not an approved vaccine. It's just really kind of in the experimental stage that they couldn't mandate it or require it. Right now, we've got Oregon State University, Western University, and a bunch of others that have, in fact, mandated vaccines anyway. What's the ruling on that? Can public and private universities mandate adults get an experimental drug as a condition of attending?
If it's a state entity or a local government, no. While it's under EUA, they cannot require it. However, there's a question of what private entities can do or public-private partnerships. And what the law currently reads is that we need the Secretary of Health to speak directly to that for this particular product, which has not been done and it needs to be challenged. However, if you cite the EUA law, you look this up and it says that you can't require it because informed consent is absolutely necessary. What a lot of people don't know is on the CDC website, when you go to vaccines, it says the CDC doesn't hold a standard of informed consent for vaccinations. That's not their standard for the administration of vaccines. That's the job of the state and the local entities. However, the EUA products are different. There is a standard for informed consent. Informed consent must be given. If informed consent must be given, that means you can't force it upon someone because we are freely allowing them to make a decision without coercion. And, you know, the whole argument is that the government's not requiring it. They're leaving it up to the private sector. How do people feel comfortable running their businesses, their schools, et cetera? But we need explicit protections for the population because businesses cannot be trusted with human rights.
And they shouldn't be. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, we'll be talking about some remedies, what you can do, what your business can do. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Lydia Wilson. She's an attorney and the co-founder and executive director of the nonprofit Stand for Health Freedom. They have great information and a lot of tools that you can use to get involved at standforhealthfreedom.com. And Leah, give us that text again.
Yes, the text is the word STAND, S-T-A-N-D, to 313131.
Great. 31. Okay. And so in that last segment there, we were talking about as this is moving now into the private sector, they're leaving some of this up to them to enforce these COVID mandates and whatnot, especially the vaccine passports. So what if can a business on their door, can they say, have a sign that says, if you've taken the experimental vaccine, there are enough questions about the long-term effects that we ask you not to shop here. We are turning, we're turning our society on its head. We're losing our inherent freedoms over an experimental gene therapy that has known side effects and doesn't stop the spread of a virus that has a 99.8% survival rate to begin with. So why can't employers and businesses start to say, you know, we just don't want you here if you're vaccinated?
Well, we've seen that happen once. I mean, to my knowledge, I'm sure it's happening in many places, but I don't know if you're aware of the Centner Academy in Miami. The director there, the president and owner of the school, sent a letter to her faculty and staff saying that my kids did not sign up to be a part of this experiment. So if you get the vaccine, you will no longer be employed here, in so many words. And it was very respectful. It gave options, et cetera. However, it became a part of the news cycle in a massive way. And that shows you that not many people are taking that stand when the White House chooses to comment on an individual academy's policy. And so Layla Centner took a really firm stand on that and said, there's too much we don't know, and we're not going to take that gamble with the kids that are part of our school. And people have that concern. We're seeing crazy things all over that we've never seen before. And it just so happens to coincide with the uptake in this vaccination. For example, women who have gone into menopause or coming out of menopause, middle school girls are skipping their periods. Moms of the kids who are coming home from school where everyone's had the vaccine are skipping their periods. And it's just thinking, okay, what are these fertility issues when we know this spike protein particularly has risks of fertility, like we heard from a former Pfizer executive before the vaccine was even released.
That's right. Yeah, there's just so many things to be concerned about this. And none of that gets talked about. It's safe. It's safe. It's safe. That's all we ever hear from some of the social media and whatnot. So in terms of schools, we talked earlier about the universities. What about school-aged children? Can public schools be mandating that you get a vaccine?
The current state laws are still governing what we can do with our school children. So if your state has a religious exemption, a philosophical exemption, a medical exemption, then those can still be exercised. I think a big misunderstanding when people hear any edict right now and they hear any request, or they take it as there's zero exemptions. And people are forgetting to even exercise their rights and say, oh, here's my religious exemption, or here's my medical exemption to this, and see how they respond. We have seen people, even universities, honor a philosophical exemption, but it's only because the person thought to exercise their rights.
That's
and
right.
We even saw one university honor a religious exemption to participating in the PCR testing. They were doing PCR testing across their campus for prevalence studies. And this young woman said, it is against my religion to participate in an experimental medical process procedure. And she opted out and they honored that. They didn't honor it very nicely, but they did say, okay, that's fine. You don't have to participate, but we're sad that you're not contributing to saving the world.
Yeah. So in terms of the constitutionality of mandates, and I know that some of these cases are still winding their way through the courts, and we've had some early successes here. You mentioned there about the legislature taking the governor of Michigan to task, and it was found that she had overreached her authority. So if some of these things, especially the vaccine passport, if this was to get to the level of the Supreme Court, what would your suspicion be on how they would rule on this?
My suspicion is that it would not hold up, that it would fail. The vaccine passport programs would fail. But you see crazy things happen right now because judges are human, because judges are affected by relationships and the feeling of responsibility for society. Even the Jacobson case, which is a horrible case, it provides us some framework that says, whatever we're facing has to imperil the entire population. And when this virus has a 99.9% survival rate, and then our children even higher than that, and in the vulnerable, it's 99.7%, according to the CDC's data. You know, that's not my data or my friend's data. That's literally what the CDC is telling us the survival rates are. I think they'd be hard pressed to show that it's imperiling the entire population. Even so, we have some bad Supreme Court law, and people constantly point to the Jacobson case to say that we can do whatever we have to do during an emergency. We can force things upon people. But remember, that Jacobson case is a part of a really embarrassing progeny of cases that did things such as allow forced sterilization, internment camps for the Japanese. And we're not proud of what happened in the early 1900s. And we have had some major gains in civil rights since that time.
That's right. We sure have. So, all right, Ty, let's go and take a break. Knowledge is great, but it's what you do that matters. And now that you've heard all this, there is plenty that you can do. We'll talk about that next with Leah Wilson. And welcome back in our final segment now with Leah Wilson. She's an attorney and the co-founder and executive director of the nonprofit Stand for Health Freedom. You can find out more by heading to standforhealthfreedom.com. And also, if you text STAND, the word STAND, to 313131, you'll get some information about vaccine passports. And so, Leah, let's actually start there. What can they expect back, and how can they take action with what you send back?
Yes, if you send that text in, you will receive a link to one of our most recent campaigns. We have already had over 88,000 emails sent on this campaign.
Wow.
Telling your elected officials that we want them to engage in the conversation of health passports, that they are dangerous, they must be opposed, that this is the issue of our time. And so that message will go to your elected officials in Congress at the state level, your governor, saying we want something done about this. And they'll see how many people care, and they'll get this quality message over and over again, which we've seen inspire people who would never otherwise look into the information to go ahead and look into it and then comment and start engaging our advocates in the topics that are important to them.
So in terms of some of the other things that you guys are involved in and the activism, talk to us a little bit about how you do that, because I know that you guys really use technology. You really have some pre-formatted letters for people to send out. How does that all work?
Our goal is to make it easy for people to say, you know, a quality message at the right time to the right people. It's something that the people they are contacting actually have authority over, because that's what's important, is we're getting the right message to the right person at the right time. And we want to take that barrier out of that for you. We also want to remove the barrier of time, that people feel like they don't know what to say when they don't have the time to figure it out. If you go to our website, and for example, that vaccine passport campaign, after you text in, you'll put in your information, and that information will be used to identify who represents you. And then the pre-formatted but editable message will come up. You can always edit it. Actually, it's good to edit that first paragraph if you have the time and you want to do that. If not, you press send and it goes to your elected officials. So in the matter of literally 5 or 10 seconds, you could take a stand on an issue and add your voice to that voting block, because our strength is truly in our numbers when it comes to the people's voice.
Absolutely. Using Stand for Health Freedom, what are some current campaigns that you're running besides the vaccine passport that people can get involved with?
We have some state-specific campaigns, even in Oregon. We have the vaccine passport campaign. And then the other really big one right now is the request for the CDC investigation. We're asking for a grand jury investigation to be initiated by key United States attorneys. Saying we need a group of citizens to form this grand jury and investigate the CDC's response to COVID-19. So if you're sick of the CDC's response and you're sick of what's going on today, then add your signature to that. Even if you aren't sick of it, but you just realize that it's important enough that we have an accurate reflection, and we want to make sure that things are what they say they are, and that when things don't make sense, maybe they actually don't make sense. So add your signature to that petition as we prepare to deliver those to key United States attorneys to initiate these grand jury investigations into the CDC's conduct. Because we know from mountains of evidence that the death records are being manipulated, that the death rates are overinflated, and that the case rates are overinflated or greatly larger than what they would be if they were using proper protocols. So if you want to use a text again, that same thread, you can text the word CDC, just those three letters, CDC to 313131, and add your signature and share it with 20 friends. I mean, this is important enough, folks, that we want these issues to be elevated and elevated sooner than later so that people can have the information they need to step forward.
Absolutely. That CDC grand jury investigation, I think that's something one of our previous guests, Dr. Ely, is involved with as well. What would that look like exactly if you managed to convince these state's attorneys? And you're talking at the state level, correct? Not at the federal level?
What? This is at the federal level, so it would be United States attorneys. Okay. And what it would look like is they actually have a duty to take up these investigations when they have reasonable amount of evidence that says there's been wrongdoing. So it's their duty, and we'll remind them of that, and then put the signatures behind it to strengthen the request. Then they would form a citizens group that would have the power to subpoena information, that would have the power to call expert witnesses, to call firsthand witnesses, and gather the information needed to see exactly what was behind the COVID-19 response, especially as it relates to Dr. Henry Ely's paper, which I think that's the guest that you're yes. referring mm-hmm. to most likely. Mm-hmm. He did a whole retrospective on the timeline and how the CDC started counting deaths differently for only one cause of death, and that was COVID-19 in the middle of the pandemic. So we want to know what happened there. If we corrected the count based on what had been used for 17 years and is used for all other causes of death, what would that look like? And so we want to get to the bottom of that particularly, the death count, because in any type of pandemic, in any type of assessment of a virus or a cause of death, the primary indicator and driver of policy is how deadly it is. Yeah. So we have to have transparency and yep. accuracy and if, when yep. it comes to that.
Yep. And if they blew that up, then we certainly need to know that. We see the power of questions. Rand Paul asked questions about Fauci's involvement with involvement in gain of function and the Wuhan lab and COVID and all that. And suddenly everybody doesn't have to wear masks and the pandemic is basically over. Leah, I want to thank you so much for your time. We'll definitely have to have you back.
I appreciate it. It was great to be here.
Leah's organization has made it exceptionally easy for you to take a stand. Many of them can be done in as little as 5 minutes. Head to Stand for Health Freedom. That's F-O-R, StandForHealthFreedom.com. Or text STAND to 313131 or CDC to 313131 for the grand jury investigation. Do it, don't wait, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.